not too far down the agenda, so we'll get the meeting started.
Right. I've seen the agenda, yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Deborah sent it to me.
All right. We'll call the meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Kurt?
Here.
Nancy?
Yes.
Brandy?
Here.
Mark?
Here.
Jay?
Here.
Jeff?
Are you there, Jeff? Maybe he'll call in. Jeff was supposed to call in, otherwise he's excused.
Eric?
Here.
Okay, now time for the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, next item on our agenda is approval of minutes. I see none listed there, so we won't need to go through that. Item 4, amendment and approval of today's meeting agenda. Is there any amendments to today's agenda? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve as presented.
Mr. Mayor, I might want to just add under assembly discussion item the thing that I brought up last week, but we kind of rushed to it because we had so much on the agenda about where the general fund revenues come from and what our expenditures are. I think Steve's going to touch on that, but if he doesn't cover all the bases, I wouldn't mind just adding a couple of lines.
Okay, so we'll put that as item C.
Thank you.
Budget talk. Okay, that brings us to item 5 on the agenda, and that's a report of other officers. So, Brad, do you want to weigh in, or
how do you want to go forward? Do you want me to walk through your FY18 priorities and tell you where everything is, or do you have something? Do you have something specific that you want to talk about first?
Out of this list on fiscal year 18. Which ones do you feel are the most important that we should talk about? And does anybody on the assembly have any specific questions for our lobbyist? I asked that he call in just so we can talk to him. You know, you guys can talk to him in person. Steve and I had a discussion with him about a month ago. So, Steve?
May I step out of the room? Jeff's trying to call me, and I can try to maybe figure out what his problem is.
Sure. No, yeah, that's fine. So the manager is just leaving the room, Brad, but does anybody have any?
Let me walk through the items that really quickly that probably aren't going to require much discussion.
Sounds good.
And then we can narrow it down to the other items that are a little more alive. The payment in lieu of taxes, which I know you guys get around $600,000 a year on, that's really locked and loaded. They've moved out of the mandatory spending, which needs to be reauthorized, and like secure rural schools, and it's in the discretionary budget. Lisa Murkowski is the chairwoman of the Senate Interior Appropriations Subcommittee. She's fully funded TILT. Once they get a final budget agreement, and they will get it by Christmas this year, TILT will be fully funded, so that there's really no issues with that funding stream for the Petersburg Borough, which is good news. We were concerned on essential air service a while ago that it would be a target under this new administration, and there were some early signs that people were going to target it again like they did 3 years ago. That petered out. Nobody's after EAS. It's fully funded within the budget as well. So there's really not that much concern about that program, really, at this point in time. Pink Salmon Disaster Assistance, nothing's happening. What happened is we were hoping for a disaster that we could ride, and what we got was three disasters that were so overwhelming that the fishery disasters got shoved to the side. We're still hopeful that Governor Murkowski might be able to pull something out on the final year budget bill, but we're looking at hundreds of billions of dollars right now in disaster for Texas and the Gulf Coast and Puerto Rico. And hello?
Is that you
still there?
Is that you, Jeff?
Yep, here. Okay, I heard a blip. I just didn't. So I'm really not optimistic that pink salmon's going to go this year. We're going to have to wait. We're going to have to wait until next year. And every year we wait, a little less likely that we're going to get it funded. So that, and then your dredging project. Stephen, you guys are in the middle of the study with the Corps, right?
Yes, sir. They've been out here several times and are going through the feasibility study as we speak.
Yeah, well, that program is funded both the investigation and construction in the Army Corps Small Navigation Projects Program. We've had a lot of support from the delegation about keeping that program funded at levels that would allow the Corps to move forward with your project if the investigation pans out for you. And that's fully funded in the omnibus in both the Senate and the House as well. So, you know, if the budget bill passes by Christmas, there's no funding issues with the Corps continuing your investigation. So that's also good news. Those are the easy ones. So now let's talk about the ones that got some issues. Secure Rural Schools jumps out as a real problem. I know Stephen's very aware of it, that's a mandatory spending program. It expired last year. Nobody got SRS payments this year. There's legislation to extend it over a two-year period, but there's a cost to it, and they need to find a way to offset those costs, and they haven't been able to do it. You know, there seems to be some interest at a fairly high level to do a two-year extension, but you know, they haven't moved forward with it. Sebastian, the guy that works with me, is a little more optimistic that they're going to be able to cobble something together next year, but I'm becoming increasingly pessimistic about it. Our Alaska delegation members have signed on to bills in the House and Senate to support a two-year extension, but I don't see any momentum. I think this program is in serious jeopardy of not being extended and disappearing.
So one to lobby for.
What's that?
One to keep on our radar and encourage them to refinance it or to support it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's they need to be, not just our delegation, but the delegations all over the West need to continue to be hearing from the counties that are receiving important SRS payments that this has got to be done, or it's going to create a real problem with school funding. The one thing is we are going to, you know, there's an election year next year, and there's I think this is a significant issue in a number of those western counties that are suffering. So I expect there's to be some pressure on the House leadership in particular to try and move an extension bill to take care of some of these House Republicans out west. But that's definitely something that you all should continue to press and make a high priority for the Assembly's federal priorities, because we're an eyelash away from losing this program. And I know it's a significant amount of money for you. I don't know the exact amount, but I think your last payment was between $500,000 and $600,000. So
it is a large amount, yes.
Well, that's the one problem area that I would highlight in a in any future resolution from the borough. The other issue is Coast Guard home porting issue for the new fast response cutters. Senator Sullivan held a hearing on the Coast Guard assets and infrastructure last week, and I attended the hearing. And he had a discussion with the commandant about federal fast response cutters, and he pushed him. He pushed him, you know, because the Coast Guard is going to deploy six in Alaska over the next 5 to 7 years. And it seems that they are wanting to home port the ships in pairs. We know Ketchikan's going to get two of them. And the other four, they haven't made a decision on where to home port them, but they want to do them in pairs to reduce their operating costs. Sullivan was pushing him, saying six FRCs aren't enough to cover the entire Gulf of Alaska. We need more. And I think part of that is being driven by his desire to, you know, home port vessels in, you know, in more than three communities. But I think that's a problem area for us as well. I saw a document that I shouldn't have seen that the Coast Guard had put together, trying to make the case that the range of these ships, six FRCs could have a bigger range than seven of the old Island class carriers. And even though they made it clear in the document that this was only for demonstration purposes and not to be used as where they were leaning with respect to home ports, they basically ran the radiuses out of Kodiak, Ketchikan, and Seward. So my personal belief is the commandant's going to come back to the Alaska delegation in a month and say, this is what we're planning on doing, and I'm not sure the delegation can move them off that. But that if I had to guess and bet money, my guess is those are the three communities that are going to get the pairs of FRCs, which would leave a big gap in Petersburg once they finally retire the Anacapa, which, you know, is going to happen, you know, within the next, you know, 3 to 5 years is my guess. So this is an area where you really got to keep the pressure on the Coast Guard and the Alaska delegation that, you know, we want an FRC to replace Anacapa. And if that's not going to happen, then we want another mission from the Coast Guard to be redeployed in Petersburg because, you know, we have the infrastructure to handle more ships, and the Coast Guard's got housing as well. So, we did. I think your agenda has the memo, which is the mayor's letter to the delegation that kind of sets that case out. But that's an area that definitely is going to need some work and some high level emphasis from the assembly.
I see a couple other items on this priorities and projects list for 2018, but transboundary waters, British Columbia mines. I'm sure you've seen the recent letter that was signed by the governor, lieutenant governor.
Yeah, I was going to mention that they kicked the letter out. kicked the letter out a week ago.
Right.
And I was, you know, Sebastian was going to send it up, and I told him we were going to have this call, so he just gave it to me. But that's where, you know, the continuing focus, you all did a resolution, I think, in October, mid-October, on this very specific issue. And so the Southeast communities that are concerned about it, and I think Petersburg's probably voiced more concern than anybody else, they're the ones keeping this issue on the delegation's screen and the governor's screen. So, you know, if you guys go quiet on it now, you know, you know, basically it'll undermine the effort. So I would continue to keep pressing that point that they need to have some agreement with the Canadians on, you know, monitoring, you know, the new mining activities to make sure that they're not going to pollute those watersheds. So I would keep that very high on the list as well.
Okay. I see sea otters is on there as well. I don't know if we've addressed that issue recently, but I know in the past the borough has taken a stance on that. Is what's going on back in D.C. about that? Anything?
Well, Sullivan had a hearing on subsistence whaling, an MMPA hearing on subsistence whaling about 3 weeks ago. And I think that's the first in a series of hearings that he's going to have on the MMPA. His people have told me they want to take a shot at reauthorizing the MMPA and trying to make some changes to address some of the issues Alaskans have been raising. It hasn't been reauthorized since 1994, so that gives you kind of an idea of how difficult it is to reauthorize that bill and to make changes to that bill. I don't think anybody's even thought about trying to reauthorize it in 15 years. So Sullivan's really taken this one on. What I would like to do, I mean, I don't really know how to work this one. The easiest approach would be to convince the Alaska Native community in Southeast to make a request to be able to change the Fish and Wildlife Service regulations to allow them to take raw pelts as part of their native handicraft, to take and sell raw pelts as a native handicraft. But I'm not sure whether there's anybody organized within the native community to even propose that, and it would really have to come from them. The other alternative is for us to come up with an amendment on our own that, you know, gives the state of Alaska the ability to basically cull problem populations out. We could draft something up for that and justify it. It would be a heavy lift, though. Any time you try and change the law governing the protection of marine mammals, you bring the animal rights community out in force, and they can really gum up the work. But we're prepared to take that on if you all are serious about pursuing it.
You know, I know there's still concern from the state government about the effects of sea otters, but I don't know what they're currently doing about it, if anything.
Well, I'm not sure they can do anything about it. You know, it's under Fish and Wildlife Service jurisdiction. The state doesn't have management. And even
right.
If they did, I'm not sure they could call out problem populations. So, and they're never going to ask for management under the existing MMPA. It's too onerous for them.
Okay, so any questions from our lobbyists, from members on the assembly?
You all want to give that some thought.
Right.
If you all want us to put together a proposal, we can do that, and we can dry run it with the Alaska delegation staff informally once you've taken a look at it.
Personally, I think it'd be worth looking at something, another, I don't know what you'd call it, I wouldn't call it a movement, but a new idea to try to do something about the sea otter impact in Southeast. But how's the rest of the assembly feel? This is something you just do on your current lobbying job for the borough?
Oh, yeah. This would just be another issue. We wouldn't ask for any more money.
My opinion, it'd be worth seeing something different.
Yeah.
Member Wallhuter?
Yeah. Kurt Wallhuter here, Brad. I've been involved in this for quite a while there. And it was back in the mid-60s when the Nuclear Regulatory Commission decided to transplant some sea otters back out of the Aleutian down into Southeast because they wanted to blow up a harbor out in the Aleutian chain. So the feds actually, you know, were, you know, instrumental in bringing these sea otters back in here, so I think it's probably up to the feds to try to figure out how we can maintain a livelihood down here on something that was, you know, that was, it was, you know, indigenous at one time, but, you know, it was manageable. So now it's unmanageable.
Right. Do we have any, has the state done any studies, or is there anything in writing that kind of sets out the magnitude of the problem that we could take a look at?
You know, you might want
a lot of fishermen screaming, but I'm not sure I can take that to the bank.
You might want to get a hold of Senator Stedman's office. He tried to impose a bounty on otters a couple of years ago in the legislative session, and it wasn't very well received, but now people are thinking it might not have been such a bad idea. And that was just to help offset the expense for the only people that can go harvest the otters, marine mammals, you know, other species besides otters, is the natives. So, you know, I don't know where that's at, but I know it's still being discussed.
Yeah, I mean, and the simplest solution, and you know, we may come back to you with this. The simplest solution would be just to define traditional native handicraft to include raw skins, and you know, then they could go out and hunt them. Then, you know, hunt them and sell the pelts to the fashion industry, and you know, probably make quite a bit of money on it, and that's the quickest way to cull the herd. I mean, if they have to take the pelts now and do their own handicraft, you know, they're not going to take many pelts.
And it's quite expensive and time-consuming. There's a few local people that have tried it, and they have, to my knowledge, have basically backed off on it. But if they haven't changed the wording,
they might be able to find a buyer of raw pelts. You know, the fur industry's coming back.
If they haven't changed Fish and Wildlife Service's description of what it is to modify an otter hide, it's significantly altered. And then they put the handicraft thing on it, and I understand that could be changed within the Fish and Wildlife Service itself without going to Congress. This was 8-9 years ago.
Yeah,
when
we'll
I was,
take a look at that as well. Maybe there's an administrative remedy to make it easier.
Well, I talked to one of the gentlemen from Anchorage from Fish and Wildlife Service, and I told him if I was skinned, I'd feel significantly altered. So you might want to put something like that in there. But anyway, he didn't laugh.
I hear you.
So anyway.
Okay, well, you all let me, have Stephen let me know, but if you all decide you want us to become a little more active in actually coming up with a solution to put in front of Sullivan, a specific proposal, then we can do that.
And I would imagine that would hold more water if it was more of a region-wide support than just coming from the Petersburg borough.
It would help, but we can do the initial background work to figure out what to do before we spread it out into the public arena.
Well, I think part of having you on the phone today was to discuss items you thought that were important. I guess we could give you direction at a later date, but we could do that as an assembly right now if we so desire. Anybody interested in that?
Okay.
Make it a motion.
Like I said, I'm game. The scars on my back from the last MMPA thing I did have healed. So.
Okay, maybe you could send Steve a brief, just something that we could talk about at our next meeting to maybe give you some formal direction to draft something up if you feel we need to get something either from the administration or from the assembly here in Petersburg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll do that. When is your next meeting?
That would be December
6th.
6th, I believe. 4th is the first Monday.
Oh, yeah, I can get you something well before then.
Okay, sounds good. And then maybe at some point you could weigh in on whether you think we should come back. We talked about it the last meeting, but you're aware that we decided not to try to make it in December of this year. So maybe when they come up with their schedule early next year, Congress does, we could come up with some other dates and maybe we'll have some.
Yeah, as soon as it comes out, I'll send the. Let's see. When do you go fish? When do you fish? When do you take off?
March 15th is probably when I'll be leaving town for 3 weeks.
Okay, but are you gearing up the first 2 weeks? Is it a January, February date you want, or?
Well, just throw out the dates, you know, January, February, when they come out with their calendar, up to the end of the, like, say, the 12th of March.
Okay. Yeah, I could do that.
Thank you, Brad.
We'll pick the weeks. We'll pick the weeks that they're both in session, both the House and Senate in session. There will be a couple weeks in January, and I think 3 weeks in February. Possibly the first week in March. And I'll send those to Stephen as soon as they're out. I expect to see those early December.
Yeah, okay. So before you get off the phone, is there any other questions of our lobbyists? Jeff, are you hearing all of this discussion?
Yes, I am. I have no questions at this time.
Okay, perfect. All right, thank you, Brad, for calling in. Thanks for your time.
All right, folks, thanks. We'll be talking to you soon.
Okay. All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Brad. Bye. Next item on the agenda is public hearings. There's one item, item A, 17-298, public hearing for ordinance 2017-15, an ordinance of the Petersburg Borough adjusting the fiscal year 2018 budget for known changes. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify to this public hearing? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, seven bid awards. That's only one item, A, 17-305, Icicle Seafoods Sectionalizing Switch Project Professional Services Contract. Entertain a motion to approve this.
So moved.
Second.
A motion's been made by Member Stanton Greger, seconded by Member Strand, and it's, what this is the action would be Public Works Director Hagerman recommends award of a design/build professional services contract to Electric Power Systems of Juneau for the Icicle Seafood Sectionalizing Switch Project. A proposal was provided to the borough in an amount of $59,225 for the work. If awarded, the work may be able to be completed within the week of December 4th through the 8th. Is there any discussion or questions on this? Yep. Member Castro.
Yeah, Carl, I see this as Capital Project 701. Is this out of the Electrical Enterprise Fund or is General Fund?
701 is a PMPL project fund, so that all the money that goes into that fund comes from Power and Light Reserves.
Okay, thank you.
I have a couple of questions.
Member Brawl?
Were you guys all aware that this was part of the, that this was going to be part of this job, this part of the contract? I mean, was it before? And I mean, I'm unaware. Is this the first time that this has been brought forward, this portion of this?
As far as how it was going to be paid for or awarded, this is the first I've heard of it, but I know it was going to be divided into two parts all along, earthwork and then this part. So that's all I know about it.
Well, I mean, because originally it was going to be the Power and Light crew that was going to take care of this, correct?
That is correct. So, originally it was designed as an in-house project.
And so what projects do you currently have that you're working on that would make it so that you guys aren't able to do this in-house?
I'm going to defer to Scott on that.
Right now, we've got the crew we've got right now. It's got its hands pretty full with day-to-day business, such as line orders, services, trouble calls. A job like this, where we're going to have the trench open and pulling primary wire and stuff around the school, and we kind of need to get on it and just get it done. And as far as the crew is going to help as much as they can as far as delivering materials and stuff to the, if we get this, they would help them out a little bit. But right now, with the size of the crew we got, you know, we can't just pull off and go take care of a trouble call if somebody's out of power. You know, if we had a bigger crew, you know, like we did 6 years ago, we had six linemen. Then you could take four or five guys on and say, okay, you go do this job and stay on it, you know, until it's complete. Right now, you know, you go to work, I can't send them up there and, okay, go to work and then, you know, pull off and then go do line orders or run a service to a house or.
Well, other than the ditch being blocking the street. I mean, it's not crucial. It's done in a week's time, and the majority of this is being done. I mean, it's not live. I mean, there's nothing crucial other than the outage, correct?
Well, no, because you're going to have primary wire laying on the ground. It's insulated wire. You don't want people.
Well, right, but there should be a, I mean, other, like I said, other than the street part, you should be able to stop and go. I mean, if it takes a month, what does it, I mean, iSchool's down. I mean, they're not in production mode is what I'm saying. So,
right.
I mean, I don't see why, if there's no other big projects, why you guys can't.
Well, we got to coordinate the outage too with, you know, TU and.
But that's just for the outage portion, right? Which is 12 hours.
Right, yeah.
So whether it's 12 hours at the end of the month or 12 hours on the 9th, what? I guess I just don't understand why it can't be done in-house.
Okay, we have another member. Castro, you have a question?
That was just more of a question to Scott and this. So hypothetically, if we were to use it, do it in-house, as Member Morrell is speaking of, how long would you believe it would take if you were to just have the three linemen that we have?
Well, actually, we've got two linemen, an apprentice, plus myself.
Correct. Thank you.
It just depends on what happens day to day. You know, I mean, I can't say who's going to be doing what trouble calls we're going to have. The winter, you have a lot more trouble calls in the winter because of the freezing weather and 2 months. I don't know. You know, it depends. You know, you got the holidays coming up too where people are going to be gone. And to me, it's just be better on this project if we could just get it done and be done with it. Just, you know what I'm saying? Just. Because that pole needs some serious attention. It's better we take care of it sooner than later, you know, because I don't want to be the guy in charge when that thing's laying on the ground during herring season or something, you know.
Pole's looking terrible.
I just think right now, the size of crew we got, it's just not a good idea to try and do that, plus the day-to-day business.
Okay. Do you see it as a safety issue, perhaps?
Well, if you can't do, well, some of the stuff you can't do with a certain amount of people, we'd have to have our whole crew during the outage to do that. But not so much a safety issue. I mean, the guys are smart enough not to do anything wrong, but it's just the timing, I guess, and the manpower is the way I see it.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion on this matter? So what's the last or the latest date you would like to see something like this completed? March to for like probably when the iSchool ramps back up for herring.
Well, if they're going to Nathan and I'm not really sure. We tried. We was wanting to get it done sooner than later.
Right.
Member Gregor, Stan Gregor.
Thanks. I'll talk from my 2 cents on it. Reading the end of Director Hagerman's memo here, Carl, is that accurate that if we award this today, really like to start going first week of December? Just to clarify.
That's a possibility. Nothing is for sure until we get a contract in place with the contractor, but they've been aware of it. They've been working on the proposal for a while now, and I was planning to have this in front of the assembly long before now,
sure.
But it's all coming together, and if we do get approval, we can take care of it in short order.
More or less get it, bust out the work while things are slow at iSchool, good convenient time of year, and get it done is what I'm hearing from you guys as the goal.
That has a lot to do with it. We know that iSchool's not doing anything right now, trading union. I think we can do an outage that isn't going to affect them, maybe after their hours. Outside of their normal operating hours. This project's been languishing for a couple years.
Sure.
And so it'd be nice to get it done with.
So as I talked about earlier, this is in two phases. There's a retaining wall and some earthwork, and that's right on the corner by the middle school. Is that where they've got the sidewalk and stuff tore up now? Does that project have to be done before this can be done? Because if that's the case, I don't see any forms or retaining walls or anything, not snooping in your business, but I drive by there on my way home, and if this is you know, how it's going to be done in phases, then that kind of puts this December 4th to 8th date, you know, pushes it back if one needs to be completed before the other. And I don't know if that's part of the plan.
That's a great question, Mr. Mayor. The projects are absolutely interrelated, and the dirt work portion had to be started so that the demo on the site could occur. The old retaining wall had to come out, and then the dirt work contractor is basically on the back shelf until the electrical part is done, and then they will come back in and rebuild all the concrete that goes over the top of the underground services.
So it's being done in the order it was proposed. I'm just curious without much detail. You know, personally, and another concern of mine is, or not a, just, I don't know, call it a concern, but we're spending another $60,000 here unless it has some, you know, extra work, change orders, or whatever you want to call it. I'd like to, and I think the Assembly should be kept abreast of how this Power Light Enterprise Fund money that we agreed to use to do these projects, and one of the big ones coming up is the turbine rewind. We don't know how much, I'd like to know how much money we have left, like a checks and balances thing. If we spend this $70,000 or $60,000, what's that? Does that leave us plenty and have some cushion to address the turbine? I mean, not that we're right in the middle of this now, so we can't back out of it, but just curious.
Just if, and I don't have this right in front of me, so apologize if the numbers aren't 100% accurate, but in the 24-9 capital project fund that Member Castro mentioned, the 701 fund, I believe there's over 300,000, about 330,000. Those funds are not counted for in the reserves of the department. So the 24-9 fund, the rebuild fund, is an ongoing project to do upgrades around town. And those funds don't affect the reserve balance. So I think, Jody can correct me, I think it's, we're at 6.9 million or so in the reserves. So I think we're in good shape. Any work on this project, this 59,000, isn't going not in no way jeopardize a rewind project at the hydro.
Okay, that was just another one of my concerns, and without having an answer, which now I have an answer for, I appreciate that. And, you know, the more work we could do in-house, I'd like to see it done just to offset costs. But it'd be nice to get this project done and get it back online as well. So any other member Merle?
Yeah, my only thing is that you have it scheduled for a week, and they had it planned, electric power, to bring 3 to 4 guys here. I just don't see how doing it in-house, I mean, you could use a month. And I think that that's reasonable if you're managing your time correctly. And I know that there's things that come out that you don't see, so maybe 6 weeks. But that still gives you the time frame to be within PFI being down and not being in production. So I personally don't think that it's necessary to spend $60,000 when we have the capabilities of doing it in-house.
We're also going to be losing our electrician, and the line crew is going to have to do what they can as far as Harbor's, his line orders, until we get another electrician on board. So they're going to have to pick up the slack for Gary, too, because he's going to be leaving us on the 8th. So that's another thing the line crew's going to have to, it'll be their responsibility to take care of the Harbor's and his line orders and what we can take care of Gary's end of it, too. So it's just another thing that they're going to have to take care of and might take longer.
Thank you, Scott. If there are any other questions or discussion?
Just one question about Gary.
Member Walter.
When was Gary tentatively leaving?
December 8th.
December 8th, okay.
About the time this could possibly be done, whether it is or not, who knows?
Right, so, yeah.
Without any other discussion, will the clerk call the roll?
Jay?
Yes.
Brandy?
No.
Mark?
No.
Eric?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Okay, this item 17-305, the switch at Icicle, passes with a 5-2 vote with members Morrell and Jensen opposing.
That Jeff also opposed.
Oh, he voted yes.
He voted yes,
okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
I thought I counted right. I write it down, so thanks, Kurt.
Sorry, my hearing.
Is there any visitors' views related to items on today's agenda? Seeing none. We'll move on to visitors' views unrelated to the agenda. I see no people in the audience with those views either. Board, commission, and committee reports. We have Liz Woodyard from the Petersburg Medical Center. Thank you, Liz, for coming.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me here. I'm Liz Woodyard with Petersburg Medical Center, and I'm the CEO. And I'd like to just give a little update about what's been going on at the hospital. So, well, we're happy to announce that our long-term care department was awarded a five-star rating from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid, which is CMS, for the care that we provide to our residents. This is the highest rating a nursing home can obtain. The rating system comes from our health inspections, our staffing levels, and the quality of resident care measures. So we're very proud of all the staff members who care for our residents. We're also excited to share that we have hired Bailey Kubernick, and she is a speech language pathologist who joined our hospital on November 6th. Speech therapists help patients in the following areas: fluency, speech production, language, cognition, voice, reticence, feeding and swallowing, and auditory habitation and rehabilitation. This is the first time that PMC has had a first full-time speech therapist, and we are excited to have a full spectrum of rehab services at PMC with PT, OT, and now speech. We're also committed to growing our own with staff and providing opportunities for members of the community to have a healthcare career. We have a new CNA class going on right now, and we're also partnering with the University of Alaska. We offer a two-year RN program that started this fall. We have four students in the program, and the goal is for all of them to work at PMC once they graduate. We're moving along quickly with the kitchen remodel project, and it's going really well. Our dietary department has been doing a great job going between Ocean Beauty back and forth and using their kitchen, and we're appreciative of them allowing us to use the kitchen, but I'm sure they're going to be happy to be back, and it's going really well. And as you remember, that cost was right around $350,000 that came out of hospital operations. Also wanted to share some of the other capital improvement purchases that the board authorized for this fiscal year. The board authorized over $650,000 for these purchases, and again, all of the funding comes from our operational funds. We are updating the building climate control system to allow effective use of the new boiler and chiller. We're upgrading some IT hardware. We're planning to install an automatic door in the ER entrance, purchase a new exam table, buy two new beds, install a new nurse call light system, purchase an infant warmer system, a new range for the kitchen, and then lastly, a new DEXA unit, which will be in the radiology department, and that is used to measure bone density, and we've never had a DEXA unit too, so that'll be a nice new service to offer patients. Some interesting statistics for the month of October. We saw 63 patients in the ER. We had 16 surgeries. We saw 94 patients for x-ray. 36 patients had an ultrasound, and 41 patients had an EKG. We had 933 clinic visits. And this is just amazing. We washed 8,7272 pounds of laundry. So that's a lot of laundry every day. And we served 1,154 meals. Our daily cash on hand is 85 days, so we're doing very well financially. We're also excited to welcome two new board members, Jared Cook and Cindy Lakadakis, and our other board members are Darlene Whitehorn, Marlene Cushing, Tim Kieneman, and George Doyle. We have one board vacancy. And I want to just thank you for the opportunity to share some information about the hospital, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about what we're doing.
Any assembly members have questions for Liz?
You said you have a new CNA class. How many do you have, any enrollees so far?
We have five.
All right.
So we offer CNA classes maybe 3 to 4 times a year. And then as people graduate, they get jobs.
Excellent.
Any other questions?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor.
Walter? Okay, Mr. Walter first, then you, Jeff, okay?
Okay.
Kurt?
Sorry, Jeff. So what was the clinic visit again for that?
933,
and that was for the month of?
October.
Just the month of October. Okay, that's incredible. All right, thank you.
Okay, Member Mucci?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for coming, Liz. I have a question about the long-term care facility. Is there a standard fee that you charge for people staying at the long-term care facility and the treatment they get, or is that a variable fee that's charged folks?
It's variable from hospital to hospital based on the cost of care. So our fees are actually a little bit cheaper than maybe than Sitka, for sure, I know. But they're all in a similar range. But just like a hospital bed, how much it costs to stay in a hospital bed is determined by cost, your cost. It's the same thing.
Did that answer your question, Member Mucci?
We're getting there, Mr. Mayor. So is there a way that I could get a breakdown of the daily cost for a long-term care stay?
Oh, yeah.
Or is that too broad of a question? Do I need to narrow it down a bit? Or?
Well, it's right around, it's about $21,000 a month.
Did you hear that, Jeff? It's $21,000 a month, or would you like a breakdown?
$21,000 a month. So what?
$21,000 a month.
Excuse
me.
To a day.
You just have to divide that by 21,000 divided by 30. I don't have a calculator.
No, roughly 700.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't ask me.
Okay, so if it is $700 a day, Mr. Mayor, is there a way I could get a breakdown on what those costs are that total up to $700 a day?
She's thinking.
I'm pondering. I don't know if we just base it on our costs for what the cost of it is for the building, what staffing is. But most hospitals just have a cost per day charge. So we don't bill extra like for meals or nursing staff. It's all included. Laundry is included. All those things are included. So we don't break them down. Hospitals just have a cost per day.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
But those costs per day must be based on costs that it costs the hospital to administer a long-term care patient. And there must be some type of basis for that $700 a day,
we do a cost report. We have an annual cost report. And then CMS and Medicare and Medicaid, we kind of work with our cost report, and we get a daily cost. But I'm sure our CFO, if you'd like to talk to Doran, I'm sure our CFO would be happy to work with you further on that.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, that'd be great. I'll stop up when I get back in town next week.
Okay, thank you, Member Mucci. Any other questions of the CEO?
Mr. Mayor, may
yeah.
I ask, Liz, and I can understand you not having this, but you talked about emergency room visits. Do we have any feeling for how many of them might be related to opioid issues here in town? Or is that information you can even release? I know so much of this is...
Right. Well, we do track all emergency room visits by type of visit. And I'm part of that CHAIR coalition that we're all together working on trying to reduce substance abuse and track and trend. And we do have some data that we can pull. It's a fairly small number, but we do have that data. I don't have it on the top of my head, but we have given that data to the coalition.
Thank you. Member Roll, do you have a question?
Yes. Yeah, what's the name of that coalition? It's different from the homeless one, right?
Yep, it's called CHAIR, and Petersburg Mental Health leads that and coordinates it, and there's many different groups from the community that are involved with that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, Liz? Thank you,
Liz,
for filling
us
in. Okay, that brings us to the next item on the agenda, consent agenda. There's no items there. Mayor's report. We're still looking for letters of interest from qualified borough residents to serve on our community by filling a vacant board or commission seat. We have one seat on the hospital board and three vacant seats on the public safety advisory board. In addition to that, we have some seats on the historic preservation committee. There's two vacant seats, one for an archaeologist and one for an assembly member. Those terms will end 12/31/2017 for the archaeologist and 12/31/2019 for the assembly member. Those letters of interest, if anybody wants to submit them, can be mailed to Box 329, Petersburg, Alaska, 99833 through the borough clerk. Our email and all those that information is online. And now we have Southeast Alaska Power Agency Board of Directors. This is an annual appointment by the member utilities, Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Petersburg. I asked the deputy clerk to print off a... And Jeff, sorry, you won't have this, but it's how we go about selecting these. It's not in our code. It's not in the charter. It's just by the bylaws of the Southeast Alaska Power Agency. And each member utility shall notify all other member utilities in writing of its designated director and alternate to the board. So that's just highlighted on this page. And the right of a member utility to appoint a director or an alternate to the board is not transferable to any other entity or person without the prior unanimous consent of all directors. I guess what I'm getting at is this has always been done in Wrangell and Ketchikan by just appointment of the mayor. So there's four names. One other name came in after the deadline to get stuff on the agenda packet, and we did have a deadline for that, was the 14th. And next time we advertise for this, I think we should maybe put a deadline when we accept letters for this type of a thing. So anyway, there's John Jensen, myself, Bob Lynn, and
Gary Morgan
put his name in. So if the assembly wants to vote on these, we'll do it by a closed ballot. Otherwise, I will appoint like the other mayors do. What's the assembly want to do? Member Stram.
Personally, I'd like to vote on it with a closed ballot.
Okay. Is that how we're going to proceed?
That works.
That's a motion. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll write, there's two sections to this. We're going to vote to see who of the four get appointed to the two seats, alternate and voting member, and then we'll vote to see which one of those will be the voting member and which one will be the alternate. Because who knows how the votes are going to come out. I think that would be cleaner.
Can you repeat that, please, Mr. Mayor?
Two sections. We need two people to be appointed to the SEPA board for the calendar year 2018, starting January 1st.
Okay.
And once we determine out of the four who those two are going to be, we will decide who the voting member is going to be and who the alternate will be.
We'll further narrow the field. Got it. Thank you.
So I guess we just put down two names for who we want to be on the board for 2018. And it takes four to decide anything on this ballot.
Yep.
And the names have to be spelled correctly for them to be asked.
Not necessarily. We'll leave that at the interpretation of whoever's counting. That will be the borough clerk.
The three.
I'm already passed them.
Trying to save you.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I texted my name to the city manager.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We are. Yeah. Mindy has Steve's phone, so we are counting your vote. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. So Gary Morgan, 2 votes. Bob Lynn, 5 votes. Mark Jensen, 4 votes. And John Jensen, 1 vote.
Okay, so that means Bob and myself will be on the SEPA board, and now we will vote again out of from those two to see who will be the voting member and who will be the alternate. So it's either Bob or Mark. Or so let's just vote for the voting member. How about that? Let's make it simple. I guess it's kind of obvious what the other one will be then.
Got it. Voting just for the voting member.
These aren't even big enough to get an airplane out. No, not so
much. Efficient.
We can airmail the answers in.
Definitely could I get through.
Tell Jeff that, yes.
A lot of weight with that one.
Mr. Mayor, you can tell Jeff that Mindy got his vote.
Your vote's going to be counted, Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Looks like it's Bob as the voting member.
Okay. Is there a number of votes?
5 for Bob, 2 for Mark.
Okay. Okay. We've appointed the Southeast Alaska Power Agency Board of Directors for 2018. Next year, Ketchikan will have 3 voting and 3 alternates. The following year, we will have 2. Like Wrangell has 2 this year. That's just the way the system was set up. Next item on the mayor's report, Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association Board of Directors is looking for someone from the assembly, or I'll go read the whole thing. Sarah, Board of Directors includes 1 position established for municipalities within the region. The assembly is invited to nominate an individual by December 1st, 2017 to serve during 2018 and 19 in this regional position. So I guess we need to make a decision now. Then it doesn't sound like it has to necessarily be someone from the assembly, just someone from the municipality. I would be willing to put my name in if no one else is interested, or unless someone else has a name they would like to submit. Member Strand.
Who is our present representative?
That I'm not sure, but I believe Member Walter,
I'm on NSERA, but I just resigned because I just way too much on my plate. So there will be another opening for NSERA.
Right. And so you just resigned, so that term.
I just resigned for this, okay, at this last meeting, yeah.
So we'll make a note of that.
Yep.
Member Walter, does this take a lot of effort? I mean, is this, you said,
nope,
you had a design?
Twice a year. Okay. 2 meetings a year. Yeah. You know, yeah, basically, and all you are is a board of director, and then they also have an executive board. So you're there to put input, like at a Board of Fish meeting, you know, to represent, you know, your community on issues that they, you know, they may seem pertinent to that. But then, so you just get a voice out of like 25 people.
Yeah. Member Castro, you're expressing interest.
Gosh, no.
Okay.
Part of the liaison to the.
Right.
You do get free airfare, hotels, and stipend for food and stuff down there, so.
Point of clarification, we're not talking about this one right now, are we?
Well, NSERA and Sarah are both the same. They both operate about the same, yeah.
NSERA,
so no dime out of your, no money out of your pocket, basically.
NSERA is Northern, Southern, Southeast, yep, Regional. You don't have to have the acronym. Okay, so we're just talking about appointing to Sarah at this, exactly, point. They want someone by December 1st, which is before our next meeting, so Member Stangreger.
Mr. Mayor, I have since you've expressed interest, I support you in taking that on.
I'll second that, if there needs to be a second.
Okay, well, we're going to appoint somebody or nominate. I guess we're just nominating. They might not want to do the nomination, so we'll see how that goes. So is that the will of the assembly to nominate me for this position? I'm willing to do it.
Did we ever figure out who our present representative is? It's if Kurt is NSERA?
I don't know.
May I, Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Yeah, we don't currently have a member of the assembly that's on that board. There may be somebody in Petersburg that's on it. I think when they throw this out, they throw it out to all the communities, so they don't parse it out by community necessarily. Did that make sense?
I mean, this could be.
We don't currently have somebody, unless there's somebody in the community already on that board that I'm unaware of.
So possibly, without detailed description, this might just be a nomination from someone from your borough or your municipality, and it goes into the whole Sarah region, and then they choose a vote who they want.
Possibly. I believe that's how it's
right.
being done.
So we have members in town, Member Strand, that are on the board of fishing. Max Borhatch is the president of the board, I believe, and then there's a few other
Bob Martin.
So we have people from Petersburg, but this is just representing the municipality. So I'd be willing to throw my name in the hat and whatever the protocol is for getting selected. So all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Was that an, okay, Jeff, was that an aye for opposing or aye for approving?
Approving.
Okay, 7-0. All right, moving on. Pretty big day last Thursday on the 16th. Governor Walker came to town and signed our lands bill, which went through the legislature last year. I'd like to thank the legislature for passing that, Senator Stedman's office for getting the ball rolling on that, especially Randy Ruero as chief of staff, worked with DNR the year before the legislative session and got him up to speed on what we were asking for. Liz Cabrera was instrumental from Petersburg in doing that. I testified a few times. Our lobbyist was involved in it. Our representative, Christ Tompkins, along with Sam Keto, helped carry the bill through the House side. So, and that, what that does is gives Petersburg 14,666 acres within our borough boundaries to use for things it sees fit. And I would, our land selection committee will have to finalize or make a detailed description of the land they want, and I believe that will all come before the assembly for approval. Steve, do you have something to add? Or?
No, just exactly that, yeah. They make a recommendation. The assembly has to ratify the list before it goes to DNR.
Right, okay, thank you. So that was a pretty good day. The last Municipal League Conference, myself and Member Morrell attended. It was pretty interesting. One thing I think we should keep our eye on is this House Bill 199, Fish and Wildlife Habitat Protection, is going through the legislature, proposed by Member Stutes from Kodiak last year. And fish habitat is what they're trying to protect, but it might be a little bit too restrictive. Any stream, even if it only has water in it, and a heavy rain, is going to be considered anadromous. And now they have a cataloged group of streams that are recorded as anadromous, and that's what has to meet certain criteria before you can do projects, road building, culverts, or land development. This, you would have to prove that it wasn't. So it's a little bit too restrictive, and I think we should keep an eye on that. One thing that would be impacted is if this goes through, all of our wastewater plants in Alaska, their permitting will be good until they expire, and then you have to go through this process, and it could be very difficult. Even to put a culvert in, to put a driveway in, might require this. So, you know, maybe at some point during the next legislative session, our body might want to make a comment on it. Also, there was this opioid panel that was made up of these like seven people, and I saved a list of this, and it's this has been put into place by Mayor Bert Cottle from Wasilla. He's been working on this for a few years. Last year I wasn't very optimistic when I attended, but this group of people was very, very good. And I'll give this to the clerk. Jay expressed interest in getting a copy of it. I already gave a copy of this to someone that works at Petersburg Mental Health, but maybe that should be given to their staff. This panel is made up of many people that are recovering from opioid abuse, and they've formed a business that houses people helps them through safe recovery. And so it's Member Morrell sat in on this too, and I think she enjoyed it. If you have something to say about your visit and your newly elected officials.
No, the training was great. It was very informative. And the conference was, there was a lot of different workshops that had a lot of, from the gas line to opioid and homeless, the homelessness crisis and the opioid crisis in town, or in not just town, in the state, even on a federal level, and there was just a lot of good information and just different people in different communities and how they're trying to attack this, basically, and fight it. It was very interesting. There was lots of... I'm glad I attended. Thank you guys for letting me go.
I think it's a very informative class. So it's enough time on the mayor's report. I don't have any... Well, let me look at my notes.
Mark?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes. Member Castro.
Yeah. Well, I hate to backpedal just a little bit, but, you know, we got into the voting before I had a chance to be able to say that. But, you know, I'm relatively unaware about what the SEPA board does. And I feel that a large portion of the public may feel the same way. And I was wondering, if, since you've been on it for a while, if you might be able to just kind of add some clarity to that.
Well, to go back in a long history, SEPA was formed when the Four Dam Pool was dissolved. And that was when I first became a council member 11 years ago. And the board of directors is from the three municipalities. There's one at large, and it goes by the hydro projects. Swan Lake, Mikechkin always has two votes. Tyee always has two votes, but Wrangell and Petersburg comprise those, unless you get the roaming. So five people, five voting members, five alternates, and you just talk, you know, about the business and direction you want to go with the agency. This next meeting will be in Petersburg, 13th and 14th of December, and I believe after the meeting, the manager and Power and Light are going to talk with SEPA about, you know, what their opinion, the best direction for our hydro rewind it, you know, out the road will be. Another thing that's going to be discussed in executive session is we're getting back all the reports for a new hydro developments or new, you know, ways to move forward with the system. It could involve third turbine at Tyee or what have you. But it just runs the business of the Southeast Alaska Power Agency, the two dams that provide us the 6.8 cent wholesale power it has for 19 years. So it's nice to have a local presence, and that's the way it was set up when it was divested from Four Dam Pool.
Awesome.
Steve?
If I may, just a couple, just from listening to Trey speak, who's the CEO of SEPA, two issues that kind of commonly get forgotten about what SEPA provides value. Number one, because they're focused on, you know, the marine cables, the transmission lines, and the two dams, they also have some expertise that it would be really difficult for each of the individual utilities to employ if they weren't handling a bigger, you know, in other words, both dams and lots of transmission. We couldn't afford to have that level of expertise on staff here and in Wrangell and in Ketchikan. So the fact that SEPA handles the whole system, they can pay some professionals to be involved. And the other is one that we don't think of a lot, but it's risk management. The fact is, they own these facilities. So when it comes to dealing with FERC, federal, you know, people, dealing with any issues related to risk and liability if something was to fail, it's all on SEPA. I know we're not trying to pass the buck there, but it's something that really takes the municipalities out of it so that the local government doesn't have to take that those huge risks associated with, you know, two hydro facilities, marine cable, and the various substations that are involved. So Marquette, the stuff, great, but those are two other things I guess you could add to the list that SEPA does.
Right. And I can't remember how many miles of submarine cable there are in this system, but it's the price tag for them is close to $60 million.
14 miles of submarine cable, 175 miles of overhead transmission.
Right, lines. And so and so you approve expenditures. We just put marker balls on all the overhead cables that were fading and just to keep up to FERC standards. And so it's pretty interesting.
Excellent. Thank you.
It's nice to have some longevity on the board because you know, the history of the whole system and interacting with other communities' personalities gets interesting at times, as you can imagine. But it's a great deal for us. Thank you for asking. With that being said,